students need to be put into real-world situations as much as possible to really experience their passion. And then they'll be lifelong learners and the content will come.
Welcome to Lunchtime Leaders Podcast. Today we'll be interviewing Ginger Lumen from the Turning Point Learning Center in Emporia, Kansas. Welcome, Mrs. Lumen.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Congratulations of being chosen to MC the National Teacher Hall of Fame induction ceremony this weekend. Not to put you in the spot, but knowing that you only have 7 seconds to make a first impression, what will be your first line?
Oh, gosh. That's really 7 seconds. It takes me a lot longer than that. First, I want to let you, I'm not actually emceeing it. I am actually being a host for some of the inductees. Basically, what that means is I pick them up from the airport, and then I kind of host them around the town and make sure that they have a good time when they're here for the week. So, well, it would be great to emcee. Oh, I'm not even that big a deal.
How is your summer vacation going?
It is very busy. You know, you always hear that stereotype that teachers have the summer break off and that we have 3 months or 2 months or whatever. But I don't think, let's see, I took one weekend to where I told my husband it was just him and me. And so I only did about 3 hours of work. Just because we don't have kids, gosh, we're still doing a lot of conferencing. I've been traveling. And next week I'm getting ready to go to San Antonio. And so it's great, though. I mean, teachers do it because they love it. How's your summer break going?
We're not on summer break yet.
Oh, no, you're not, are you? I forget. Yeah, we get out in May 22nd, but we start back up August 11th, I think.
Oh, wow. Back up August 31st, and 28th. We get out... Oh, 28th, wow. And
we get out June 20th.
Yeah, June 20th.
Oh, I would revolt.
We should.
I'm one of those people that says, yeah, I'm all for summer, all year-round schooling. But then when it comes down to it, I think, man, I've got a lot of work to do when the kids aren't around.
Now, anyway. what is your title and role at the Turning Point Learning Center?
My official title is Director of Face-to-Face Program. Turning Point Learning Center has two prongs to our school. One piece of the school is a virtual program where families stay at home and work with the curriculum we give them. They come in every once in a while to do, well, I say every once in a while, a couple of times a month, they'll come in to do special project academies and connect with other kids. But I work with the face-to-face where the kids come in every single day. And those are grades 5 through 8. And we have kids of all different types and varieties. We are very project-based oriented, where I give the kids a problem and they solve it. And somewhere I try to get that, you know, the standards and curriculum that we have to know. I put that in through the fun way there. Everybody has a laptop. We're very focused on working toward those 21st century skills of collaboration and working through these sorts of tools. So I don't know. It's a whole different type of school to work in, and I absolutely love it.
What was the greatest challenge in building a school from scratch?
Well, considering that we're still in the process of building it, and I don't see that we'll never stop building it, I think it'll always be in flux. I hope so, because the world is, and we should be in flux. The greatest challenge is, I guess, maybe not knowing if what I'm doing is the right thing or not. There are a lot of people out there who talk about changing schools and what they would do if they had a blank slate. But once the blank slate's in front of you, and anything, almost anything goes with what I could try here with the kids, and the parents are supportive, and my bosses are supportive, figuring out what to try first, and that if it doesn't work, do I trash it right away, or do I try it again? That's the challenge, is just breaking new ground and trying to think, what if? What happens if I try this, I guess. Yeah. And the fact that, I work 20 hours a day. That's pretty challenging, at least for my husband.
How come you're never going to stop building your school?
I think that when, and this isn't just for education, I think that when people are satisfied with, this is it, this is the best I can do, I think that you miss opportunities. Now, I am by no means a perfectionist in that my work is never done. There's a time where, you're writing a paper or if you're writing a blog post, or even if you're making the bed, you can still look at things and say, gosh, this could be done better, or maybe there's a different way to do it more efficiently. And the trick is balancing how to make it right for the kids with my school, how to make it right for their futures, versus when to feel that we need to leave it alone for a little bit. Because if something's always changing, you never get a chance to write it through and really test it out. But that being said, if we're like a traditional school and saying, this is how things will be for the next 150 years, well, I don't see how we're preparing anybody for their future. So we'll always be in flux, always looking for better. Kind of like, what do they say, the hungry hunter hunts best? So I guess we're the hungry hunters, and we're trying to make something better for the world.
You have experienced difficulty working in groups in your past. What kind of wisdom have you acquired from those experiences that you bring into the classroom for project-based learning activities at TPLC?
I've got to say I'm impressed. You've done some research on me. I talked about this in a podcast. I was that kid in school who I did whatever it took to get the grade. And sometimes getting the grade doesn't equal learning. And so working in groups, sometimes I was the person who did all the work, and sometimes I was the person who sat and said, have fun with that. I'll talk every once in a while and let you do the work. As a teacher in a regular school before I came here to Turning Point, I have seen group work go wrong in so many different situations, so many different ways. I don't know if you all have ever experienced where you've been the one who's done the work, or that you let others do the work. And usually you don't realize that you've cheated yourself. You just, until you get a little older, if you're the person who, for you. But keeping that in mind, some of the things that we have to do in this world today is to work with other people. And the fact that I was cheated, or I cheated myself, or I was allowed to cheat myself out of the good work, or that I've seen other kids just beaten down by being the only ones who did the work, I think that we need to make sure we're giving our kids positive experiences, because as an adult here in the 21st century, I am constantly working with other people. Even though I may be somewhat alone here in putting this together, and I'm not alone, because I call other people in. I say, hey, I need help with this. I mean, your teacher, Paul Bogish, has been extremely instrumental in some of the things that happen here at Turning Point, because he has such great ideas, and I think, well, gosh, let's try it here. So having those experiences in the real world, I want my students to experience the real world in school. It drives me crazy when teachers say, well, just wait till you get out in the real world and see what it's really like. I thought the purpose of school was to get kids prepared. So how do we prepare them if the real world doesn't exist in some piece in our educational system? I kind of talked all around the subject there, but I've had bad experiences in groups, and I've seen other kids have bad experiences in groups, so I'm trying to rectify that.
Looking at the people you currently see entering the teaching field, what are their strengths and what are their weaknesses?
I thought about this question a little bit earlier, and I don't work a lot with student teachers because this is such a different type of school. I don't think the education departments really want to put a student teacher in here. It doesn't really prepare them for their real world. But that being said, I live very closely to one of the best teacher colleges in the nation, and that's Emporia State University's Teacher College, and that's where the National Teachers Hall of Fame is housed. They bring their intro to teaching students in here, and every year I talk to them a little bit about what they're going to see when they come up into the classrooms and what they're not going to see. And these poor kids, and I call them kids because I'm an old lady, but they're college students, maybe first, second year college. They don't know what school could look like. I don't know weakness. I don't know. It's hard to call a student who's learning to have a weakness because, I mean, they just haven't learned it yet. They seem to have difficulties removing what school has always been for them and to think, what if and what could I do to make education better? They're really busy trying to get the answers right, just like we've been training kids to do. Oh, I don't care what you've learned. Are you right? And that's what I think a lot of our teachers, they've either enjoyed school or good at school. Most of them have been, and that's what they just want to replicate because that's what they're comfortable with. And that is a serious weakness.
What are your thoughts regarding how much we should focus on content knowledge versus focusing on students' ability to learn, adapt, and grow?
That's an easy one. Content knowledge, because I live in the world of No Child Left Behind, sure, that's something I think about. But really, truthfully, when we have Google at our fingertips, how in the world can I stand in front of a class and profess to know everything that the kids need to know? How hard is it to Google and say, oh, hey, Lumen, you are a little bit off on this, and even why should I waste time if we have a couple of seconds that we can Google and find an answer? I want the kids to be able to learn how to learn, how to unlearn, and relearn. Unlearning is what I'm seeing happen, hopefully, more often in adults, is that we're unlearning the ways that we've always done things and relearning a new way. And I think that's vital because the content, the information, that's anywhere. The skills to know how to work, that makes all the difference.
There is an emphasis on project-based learning at TPLC. How important is it for kids to be working in groups in school?
Again, I think it mimics the real world. And the projects and the problems, I'm telling you truthfully, I've got a foot in the standards-based where they tell me my kids have to pass the tests and a foot in what I want to know and want to have them do what's right for kids. It's important. It gives them real-life practice and skills, I think, working with project-based learning, more than just multiple choice questions.
What was the best learning or educational experience you have had?
The best I've ever had? As a person, I like those questions. It's got to be this entire experience with Turning Point. I was a kid who had no problems getting A's in school. I didn't learn in school at all, really. I mean, I got the A's. I'm sure I got that sort of stuff. But this putting the school together really has been and is still very difficult. And I feel like I've really grown leaps and bounds in the past 2 years in my knowledge, in my understanding of people, in my understanding of the world. And I'm so scared because the more I know, the stupider I feel in the world. And so I guess this is the best and maybe even the worst. If that's possible.
If you were going to create a graduation exam with only one question, what would it be?
Well, I don't know an exam would ever do it right. Wow, that's a great question. It would have to be an essay question, or it would be a demonstration question, obviously, if you only have one. But I think maybe the graduation, you better know what your kid knows before you get to graduation time. So I think the question would be, what should we do differently for other kids like you as they come through school? I think that would be it.
How did you go from the kid who worked from A's to who you are today?
I found a passion. I found an area of interest that just lives within inside me. The kid who got A's, whatever, I just did whatever it took to get what I needed. In high school, I've just got to get my grades so I can get my scholarship so I can get to college. I got to college, I said, I'm just going to be a teacher, so I've got to get my grades so I can get at my resume so I can get to a good job. I got my job, and I said, yeah, this is getting through. And people started talking to me about, you know, maybe you ought to start thinking about special education. And I thought, geez, man, that's a lot of paperwork, and I don't know if I have a lot of patience, but wait a minute, what if I started working with gifted kids? Because those kids are sliding by, and they're being cheated, and they're cheating themselves, and I knew this, and I said, that's it, I'm going into the field of gifted education. And there I really started falling in love with teaching and learning, because it wasn't just going through the motions, it's really having to understand a human being and their own strengths, and to really get going. So that's where it started, and then they came and tapped on my shoulder and said, hey, come teach the charter school here. And I said, yeah, I'm not really excited about 5th through 8th grade. I really want 7th through 12th. And they said, well, let's at least come talk to us. And I said, okay, so every question I asked, because I figured if they asked me, I'm interviewing them. They're not interviewing me. So every question I asked them, almost the answer was, I don't know, what would you like to do? And by this time, I'd already had my passion for education. And I said, yeah, this is the way to go. So That's what's made the difference.
You have described yourself on other podcasts as brainless and full of guts. Are those the prerequisites for joining the staff of a charter school with a program that would be seen many educators to be a bit crazy?
Oh, Lord, that's a great question. Okay. Brainless and full of guts. Yeah, I oftentimes say there's nothing to it but to do it. Brainless, I sell myself short with that. Purposeful, an optimal ambiguity. You have to wear a very thick shell. So that's the full of guts. But the brainless part, you have to realize and recognize what's going to be dangerous and tough about it, and you have to be prepared, but you can't overthink it. Just do it, and it'll come. It'll come.
When we're done today, what's the one most important takeaway message you'd like our teachers and our students to hear?
Wow, that's also a good one. The fact that you don't have, for your teachers, you don't have to individualize to have a personalized education. Students need to be put into real-world situations as much as possible to really experience their passion. And then they'll be lifelong learners, and the content will come. For students, even if your teachers aren't doing this sort of thing, you can still, because your teachers, you're done with them in a year, two, three, 4 years, whatever, even if you had them in a looping, you're done with those people. You have yourself to live with for your whole life. So start now and find your passion now. Don't waste time, because you never know. I mean, you could walk across the street and boom, that's it. Do something now, because you can take your education. And school doesn't have to be where you get your education. If it's not giving it to you, take your education from elsewhere. I guess that's it.
Thank you, Mrs. Luman, for joining us today. But unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I hope all our listeners out there will come back and listen to our next podcast.
Thank you very much. This was fun. I appreciate it.